can't believe I never thought of this before. You know how much easier this is going to make my life? I can preach like this. I can preach all day long like this. I mean, take a look. I got my cowboy blanket. Got my popcorn when I need a snack. You know I got to have a bottle of this sitting around somewhere. Got my Mountain Dew all ready to go. Man, this is the way to do it. I've been doing it at this church for almost 10 years now. You know what? Never tried this, but I think I might be setting a new standard. I mean, maybe every this will catch on, and this is the way we're going to preach from these days. Now, remember what we're doing right now, and some of you are looking at me and saying, you're kidding me, right? Well, you know me well enough, am I? We're talking about this, what's missing from our spiritual life. And we're deep into this series. There's only this week and next week left, and we've got a big list of things that have created this hole in the middle of our faith. We've talked about the fact that some of us are missing trust. Some of us are missing submission. Some of us are missing obedience. Some of us just haven't figured out how to accept the forgiveness that Jesus gave. And, well, some of us, we just aren't accepting the being authentic or authenticity. And some of us lack vision. And all of these things combine together to combine one big hole in the middle of my faith. Now, we're 2 weeks down, 2 weeks left, and then you notice that if you're doing the fill-in-the-blanks in your bulletin, they're a little different this week. It's a lot of blanks with a little checkbox. We'll talk about that in a minute. But how about we let one-time blind cue us in on what we're talking about this week?
Jesus, I am so excited today. It's like I woke up and thought, today is the day to get working for Jesus.
Kat, I'm so excited to find someone who's ready to take action and get things done.
Oh, man, I am that girl.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've got something perfect for you, so let's get started. What are you doing? Stand up. Remember, we were going to take action.
Yeah, but this is where I always sit.
Right, but I need more than this.
Oh, I know what you're getting at. Okay, Jesus, how much do you want?
What?
$50? Is that enough?
Oh, that's not what I meant.
Oh, all right. Well, 100 then, You drive a hard bargain. Okay, but you might not want to cash this till next Friday. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
There you go.
Okay, Kat, really, I do think it's great that you want to give, but I want you to mentor a younger woman.
Ooh, yeah, right. Well, Jesus, I'm not really into, teaching people and stuff. I mean, I don't really get into that.
Okay, you know that woman at the office, Amy?
Yeah.
I want you to take her out to lunch. Tell her about me.
Well, Amy is different. I mean, really different,
I know, but she needs to know about me.
And I can tell the people at the church to call her. I mean, they get paid to do things like that.
I want you to do that.
Jesus, I just don't feel comfortable doing that.
No, Kat. The problem is, you're too comfortable.
Maybe this isn't such a good look. Maybe this isn't the way we're supposed to do this. But you know what? I think maybe it is the way we do it. Now, I want you to take a look at the idea of what is missing. And we're missing action. What did Jesus tell her? We're just flat out too comfortable. Now, I want you to pay really, really close attention to how that video worked, because it's important, because I want you to see, she started out the video and what? I'm ready to get working for Jesus, going to do some, take some action, going to do things. I woke up ready to do things. And what comes into the scene besides just her and Jesus? The chair. The place she always sits, the place where she's comfortable. I have one of those chairs at home. It's a great big old fluffy reclining chair, and everybody knows it's Daddy's chair. And if I come into the room and there's somebody else sitting in the chair watching TV, and I say I'm going to watch TV, guess what? They move out of the chair because they realize it's either move or get sat on. It's my chair. It's my seat. I'm going to sit there when I come into the room. But notice how it evolved as Jesus kept trying to work at her. Other things of comfort began to come into the picture. her blanket magically appeared. The bowl of popcorn, world's ultimate comfort food. A television where she was turning on the feel-good Jesus show. It all just started coming right there before her, and the more she just kind of sat there, the more comfortable she got. Now, she tried to work her way out of it. She tried to pay Jesus off, even wrote him a bad check. I think that's hilarious. But I also think it's very telling, because guess what? I think sometimes I've written Jesus some bad checks. Told him, later, Jesus, here you go. I'll put my money in, but you know what? I like this seat where I've always sat. I like being comfortable. So this morning, we're going to take a little detour to another one of those dusty old prophets. His name is Amos. No, he didn't make cookies, okay? And I don't know that he's all that famous, okay? But his name was indeed Amos. And, well, he was all the way back in the 8th century B.C. So this guy was old. Amos 1:1, the word of Amos, one of the shepherds of Tekoa, the vision he saw concerning Israel 2 years before the earthquake, when Uzziah was king of Judah and Jeroboam was the son of Joash was the king of Israel. So we've still got the two kingdom of Israel, two kingdoms going on, and so we have a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom, and so there are two kings, and so we get the idea that, you know what, there's like a little 15-year window that Amos could have showed up in, and in that 15-year window, it said it was right at the earthquake, so we know this is right around the 8th century B.C. And, well, he comes, and, well, he was a prophet from the southern kingdom that was sent to preach to the northern kingdom. So that would be like taking somebody from down in Alabama and sending them up to New York and saying, hey, we want you to go and tell New York everything is wrong with it. Okay? And you get what's going to happen. His message was not well received. Then Amaziah, not Azariah, Amaziah said to Amos, get out, you seer, go back to your land of Judah, earn your bread there, and do not prophesy and do your prophesying there. Don't prophesy anymore at Bethel, because this is the king's sanctuary and the temple of the kingdom. Wow. It sounds like they had this all figured out. They're telling him, go back where you came from, man. Don't you realize you're in the big city now? This is the king's household. This is where the king is. You're in territory that you are not wanted. And you know why he wasn't wanted? Well, it's because Israel was in an economic boom, but a moral decline. I sure am glad the Bible has nothing to do with the times we're living in today. I mean, things were booming in the economics. I mean, the trade was going good, and you know what? They had found this kind of this little rut, this little niche there in their captivity, and they were back in their land, and they had the things that they wanted, and they were there, and they were doing well. But remember that decline Azariah talked about going through Judges? Well, it had continued all the way through the kings, and they were kind of almost at rock bottom. And so they come in, and we get the idea that Amos is going to come and talk to him. And you might say, well, why pick Amos? There's a lot of places you could talk about the topic we're going to talk about today. And, well, I want to read this from a commentary I found. I found this most interesting. Amos was fed up. While most of the prophets interspersed redemption and restoration in their prophecies against Israel and Judah, Amos devoted only the final 5 verses of his prophecy for such consolation. Prior to that, God's word through Amos was directed against the privileged people of Israel, a people who had no love for their neighbor, who took advantage of others, and who only looked out for their own concerns. More than almost any other book of Scripture, the book of Amos holds God's people accountable for their ill treatment of others. It repeatedly points out the failure of the people to fully embrace God's idea of justice. Boy, I sure am glad the Bible has nothing to do with the times we live in today, because I think this has everything to do with us, because you know what? We folks are guilty of having catastrophic comfort. So if you have your copy of God's Word, you can make your way to Amos chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, and we are going to talk about this idea of what it means to be complacent. And this is what it says in Amos chapter 6, verses 1 through 7. Woe to you who are complacent in Zion, and to you who feel secure on the Mount of Samaria, you noble men of the foremost nation to whom the people of Israel come. Go to Galnae and look at it. Go and go to the great Hamath and go down to Gath in Philistah. Are they better than you and your two kingdoms? Is their land larger than yours? You put off the day of disaster and bring near the reign of terror. You lie in beds adorned with ivory and lounge on your couches. You dine on choice lambs and fattened calves. You strum away on harps like David and improvise on musical instruments. You drink wine by the bowls and use the finest lotions, but you do not grieve over the ruin of Joseph. Therefore, you will be among the first to go into exile. Your feasting and lounging will end. So coming right off the bat, as Amos gives them the diagnosis that these people have become complacent. Verse 1 says, "Woe to you who are complacent in Zion." So I began to think, complacent. What does it mean to be complacent? Well, it's a feeling of smug or uncritical satisfaction with one's own achievement. So I'm basically satisfied with me. I'm smug. Look at me. I've accomplished all of this. It also means to feel satisfied with the current state and to be disinclined to make things better. So I want you to catch the word that's key to those two pieces. The word is satisfied. It's the key concept when we become complacent. We become satisfied. I mean, you have all that you really want, and then we take our satisfaction and we make what I call a satisfied sandwich, and here's the way it works. You are satisfied, and you never want anything to change, because if it changes, you may no longer be satisfied. Isn't this kind of what we do in our churches? We make ourselves satisfied, we make ourselves content, we make ourselves comfortable, and we become satisfied, and we no longer begin to take action. And the thing is, as that continues to unfold, we get a strict disease called the do-nothings. Jesus talked about this in Luke chapter 12, verse 19. "And I'll say to myself," this is from one of his parables, the parable of the rich fool, "and I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Drink. Be merry. Man, I've accomplished it all. I got the building. We got the comfy pews. We got the air conditioning. We got the instruments. We got somebody that comes to speak. We've got a children's director. We've got all the things that we need. So you know what? I am now, here's our word, I am secure. I've got all I need. There's money in the bank. The bills are paid. We don't want to get too close to those people out there because they might mess it all up. I mean, if I bring those people in there, I mean, some of those people are different. They're really different. And if I bring them in here, oh my gosh, they're going to upset my apple cart, and they might actually ask for my seat. I might have to find a different place to sit in the sanctuary. I might have to find a different place to park my car. Don't you understand? I like things the way they are. And the important thing that you need to understand is this idea of complacency is deadly, but it's not fatal. This is what Amos tells these people that he's talking to. Go to Calneh and look at it. Go from there to the great Hamath. And then go down to Gath of Philistah. Are they better off than the two kingdoms is in your land larger than yours? And so Amos gives them two great big commands that he wants them to go do. And one is they have to make themselves aware. And what does he tell them to do? Take a look at the world around you. So today, if you're here and you know what, you've been doing this church thing for as long as I am, and you tend to get comfortable. The longer you're in a church and the longer you're with the church life, you get very comfortable. When's the last time you took an honest-to-goodness look at the world around you? Because if you've taken a look lately, there is absolutely, positively no way that you can be a follower of Christ and be satisfied with how the world is going. Now, it isn't just enough to take a look. Because you know what? I look at things sometimes, and I usually have one of three responses. I look at the world and I see how the world is going and I see how the language is going and I watch things on the television and I look at things in the world and you know what my first thing I want to do is I'm going to complain about it. Yeah, they need to get their stuff straight. They need to get everything working. I got all the advice in the world for them, but you know what? I'm just going to complain. You ever done this? You look at the world and say, man, I wish it would be better. I wish it could get better. I wish people would follow God. I wish people would come to church. I wish people, and you know what? We're like wishing upon a star. We just say, well, I wish, and we're still looking for our magic lamp so we can our wishes will actually come true. Of course, sometimes we get a little discouraged, don't we? You know what? It's just too much out there. It's just too much crazy. Too many things going out there. I can't do that. I can't fix it all, so I choose to fix none of it. Of course, sometimes we get really energetic and we throw a little money at it, right? Yeah, let's do this. It'll be really cool. But you know, none of those things is what Amos told these people to do. He told them to look, but what was the other verb that he used? He used it three times. He told them to have to go. Don't just observe the problem. Get involved in the solution. Oh, really? That's what I'm supposed to do? I'm not just supposed to sit here and make wishes. And the thing that you need to realize is the only way to impact those changes that we would like to see is if we impact them with actual action. I hate to tell you this. Oh, no, I don't hate to tell you this. You need to know this. The odds of you leading somebody to Christ from your pew are almost zero. Unless just by some miracle, a lost person wanders in here and sits right next to you, and then you have the gumption to talk to them. You get it, right? We look at our world and we think how horrible our world is getting, and we have all these wonderful slogans we put out there about our world. And then we want to sit here and we just want to say, well, we're going to look at it. But Jesus says, you know what? I want you to do something about it. I want you to go out there and look at it. And you're probably thinking, Barry, you're kind of being a little hard on us. I mean, because, you know, we do a lot. Yeah, we do. We do a whole lot of things in the church. But remember that church in Ephesus that we've been talking about all year? Remember? They had a lot of things that they were doing. Jesus had lots of good things to say about what they were doing. The problem is they had just lost their heart. They had lost their love. They had lost their love for Jesus. And when you lose your love for Jesus, eventually you lose your love for the people outside. And when that begins to set in, you begin to get complacent. And you're probably just thinking, you know what? Well, how do I know I've become complacent? Because I don't see it in me. Well, I'm glad you'd like to know that, because we're going to look at, very quickly, eight symptoms of complacency. Now we're going to come to those little check boxes and blanks. So as we go down through these, I'm going to issue you a challenge. Challenge number one, write the symptom on the little blank. Okay? Then as I describe the symptom, if that's you, check the box. Oh, well, are you going to take these up at the end? Nope, they're not graded. Okay, I'm not asking you to put your name on it. But I'm asking you, Rich talked about this idea of communion was a time of self-evaluation. I want you to evaluate yourself. Ask yourself, have I become complacent? So Amos gives them eight strong symptoms of what it means to be complacent. So here we go. Symptom number one, you tend to delay. It says you put off the day of disaster. There's always tomorrow. If this is your process of thinking, then you know what? You have the first symptom. I just don't feel like doing it today. You know what? I got a great big to-do list, but I don't have much of a to-done list. Tomorrow is always good enough. You know the problem with that? 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 2 says, "For he says, in the time of my favor I heard you. In the day of salvation, I helped you. I tell you, now is the time of God's favor. Now is the day of salvation." Are you really promised your tomorrow? If God has given you something to do today and you put it off tomorrow, are you really assured you're going to be here tomorrow? God has given us something to do. And if we're just kicking the can down the road, then you get it, right? This is the very first symptom that we are becoming a complacent people. Tomorrow is always good enough. So what about number two? Well, as we just follow the scripture along, we have the idea of divisiveness. It says we bring near a reign of terror. Yeah, this is that complaining thing. You remember, got any grapes? That makes no sense to you. That means you weren't here about a year ago when we had the duck song and we talked about what it means to have sour grapes in your life. But you don't understand that you've become a complainer. Man, are you a big complainer? If you are, you realize you have symptom number two. You're looking at your life, and you know what? Complaining people are usually people of low action. Their inactivity gives them time to see what others are doing wrong. And you know what? They always see themselves as giving useful advice, but they would never consider lending a helping hand. They just want to complain about how bad things are. And you know what happens when you complain? Complaining is contagious. Because I complain to you, and you complain to her, and she complains to the next person. And the first thing you know, we spread it throughout our congregation, and we spread it throughout our church. And our vision is no longer being accomplished because we see the world and we just complain about it. We become a very divisive people. We're not interested in helping. People become afraid of us. They don't want to come near us because they just don't want to hear us complain anymore. How about this one? Drowsiness. You lie on beds adorned with ivory and lounge on your couches. Now again, see the verbs? Lie and lounge. Now, I'd love to say the issue here is that you're lazy, but lazy isn't the issue. You know what the problem is? You're simply unmotivated. You see the problem. You know what's going on. You know that you can make a difference. You know you have a message to share. You know God has given you skills and talents and gifts and resources that could impact, if not the whole world, at least one life. But you know what, God? Just not motivated to do it. You know what? I like my comfy chair. I like to lounge. I like to just lay around. And you know what? I'm just not into this, God. Didn't you love the way she said it? When he looked at it, he said, I'd like you to mentor a younger woman. And immediately she grabbed that little blanket and pulled it up around her and said, you know what? I'm not really into teaching people. It's funny, he never said teacher, did he? He said the mentor. Mentor isn't that you stand up here and give somebody a lesson. Mentor is you get down off the stage and you go and you get involved in their life and you share their life with them and you actually get involved in what's going on in their life. You think maybe we're missing that? You know what? We're not motivated. Because if I get involved in your life, then all of your problems are going to upset my satisfaction and they're going to upset my comfort level. And I just can't have that. How about the idea of decadence? You dine on choice lambs and fattened calves. It's the idea of luxury and self-indulgence. Now, this doesn't mean you're rich, okay? Complacent people, though, are extremely self-centered people. They always want what's best for them. I don't care whether it's the seat in the house, the music on the radio station, television show on the TV, or the food on the table. It's always about what is best for me. I want to indulge my selfness. And so I want you to serve me what I want. And if you don't serve me what I want, then the other little categories begin to fall in because I begin complaining about the fact I don't like what you served. That's not the way I like my chicken. That's not the way I like my drums played. That's not the way I like that done. Don't you know that's not the way I like my pillow fluffed when I sit in my seat? You didn't do it right. So I want you to indulge my selfness. How about this one? Do you have a symptom of distractions? I love the way he put it. You strum away on your harps like David, and you improvise music. You improvise on musical instruments. Now, this is not a knock against musical instruments. But you understand, these people had no purpose. They had no goal. They were just sitting around and strumming. They were just having like a little personal jam session, and they were just like sitting around on their instruments, and they had no core. They had no purpose. They were just doing whatever felt good to them. You have those moments. I used to go to camp. We used to go by the campfire, and you'd sit around, and you'd strum on the instruments, and they'd hang. Okay, I didn't strum on the instruments. I sat there and watched everybody else strumming on the instruments. But everybody, you just kind of get there, and you're just chilling out, and that's okay for a while. But the problem is, I think maybe we're still gathering around the campfire every single Sunday. And we just want to kind of do whatever feels good to me, whatever feels right to me, whatever makes me satisfied. And so it becomes a distraction. Because you know what? The second what you're doing doesn't satisfy me, then you know what? I have a problem with it. And so we allow the things that we do to become the distractions to the mission that we have. If I'm going to say, I got this one because I don't drink. Hold tight. You drink wine by the bowl full. You drink wine like there's never going to be end. There's the bottomless. It's never enough for yourself. You know, that's a symptom of complacency. You may be thinking, well, that's a little bit backwards because complacency is all about satisfied. So if it's never enough, then obviously I'm not satisfied. No, you got to think about it in the right way. You're drinking by the bowlful because you're never satisfied. It's never comfortable enough for you. The air conditioner makes it too cold or the heat makes it too hot. The pews are too hard or the pews are too soft. The preacher is too long or the preacher is too short. I've never gotten a too short complaint before. The music is too loud or the music's too soft. There's not enough tradition. There's too much contemporary. There's not enough. You get what happens, right? It's never enough for you. You just want more and more and more. And you understand that is the same thing that goes with the idea of drunkenness. I just want to become the consumer. And that mentality, it means you become complacent. I love this one. How about dolled up? You use the finest lotions. You make people know, make sure people can see just how good you are. It's like the priest and the tax collector in the parable that Jesus told when the priest was up there saying, look at me, I'm great, God, aren't you just so happy I'm in your presence today? You're so honored because I showed up to your temple, God. We get in that mode. We want the finest things for ourselves. We look at it and we come in and we smile. We put on a good face and we put on the show for church. And then as we walk back out, we'll even make them hear the car. And the smile begins to go away and it begins to start. And you realize when that happens, the issue, Amos says, you're complacent. You become obsessed with making yourself comfortable. The final one I want to talk about here is you become disconnected. You not grieve over the ruin of Joseph. Now, remember who Joseph was. Joseph was the guy that got sold into slavery by his own brothers. And then his brothers went home and told his father that he got killed by a wild animal. And to make a conviction about it, to make it convincing, they took the little coat that he had got and they soaked it in blood and say, see, he's dead. Here's all of his blood. They had no grief or sorrow whatsoever for what they had done. They had sold their brother. Their brother. I don't care how obnoxious your little brother is. They had sold their little brother into slavery to foreigners and said, hey, and now we're going to go home and we're going to tell Dad a lie about it. And they had no grief. And they had no remorse for what they had done. And Amos looked at God's people and said, you've become the same way. You have sold each other into slavery by your actions. You have sold each other into following false gods. You have sold your children's future away because you built up all of these idols and you're teaching them to do the very things that then you say, don't do that. And the problem is you've just become disconnected with what it was supposed to be about. The Israelites were supposed to be God's people, centered on God, focused on God. And they forgot all of this, and so Amos comes back to them and says, by the way, there is a result for you becoming complacent. Because usually we think complacency, oh well, it'll get better. Eventually God will move my spirit, and maybe I'll move back a seat and give my seat up. That isn't what Amos says. Therefore, you will be among the first to go into exile. Your feasting and lounging, they're going to end. Now remember who Amos was. He was from the south preaching to the north. And guess which kingdom got taken into captivity first? It was the northern kingdom. Unfortunately, the southern kingdom learned nothing from their northern buddies because after their northern buddies went away, they started doing the same thing they were doing and eventually they went into captivity also. Because that's what complacency does. It puts you into captivity. And if you're sitting here today and saying, well, Barry, that's all Old Testament stuff. Well, let's go back to where we've been most of the year. Remember this church in Ephesus? Man, I hope so, as much as I talked about it this year. This is what Jesus said to them. Consider how far you have fallen. Repent and do the things you did at first. And here comes his warning. If you do not repent, I will come and remove your lampstand from its place. You get it? You live in complacency, you die in complacency. You choose to become complacent and shut yourself off from the world. Jesus says, eventually, I'm going to shut yourself off from me. And Jesus says, I will not have any part in complacency. See, Jesus wanted us to take action. That's what a lot of us are missing. We are sitting here today, and we've been doing this so long. We've been there, done that. We've got the T-shirt. I got several of them, okay? I've got several T-shirts from across my Christian life. And Jesus says, stop worrying about what you've collected over time and start worrying about what are you going to do for me today? So now, here's my question. How honest were you? Maybe you wrote the symptoms down and you want to go home and pray about which checks you check. Maybe you need a little more time to think about those particular boxes. But the reason I kind of wanted you to follow along and work on those checks as we were going down through them, because you do understand your first inclination is probably what you are. If you heard one of those symptoms and you're thinking, you know, that's me, but let me go home and think about it. Maybe it's not. Because you're going to go and you're going to find a way to justify what you do. Say, that's not really me. So let me encourage you today. Get out of the chair. Seriously. Just a moment in your life, just take one moment this week to go out in the world and really take a good, hard look at the world. And then as you're taking a look at the world, instead of allowing yourself to take the mindset that we always take, and we become bitter and we begin to complain and we start wishing, let me give you a challenge. Find a person, say, I'm going to make a difference in that one life. God, I'm going to give you one shot to show me this works, and I'm going to make a difference in that one person's life. And then go do it. It'll change you. It'll move you. Because you've taken action on the thing God said. Or you could choose another path. You can get up out your comfortable seat. We'll dismiss row by row. You can walk out to your comfortable car. And you can put the key in, and you can drive to your comfortable house. And then in the morning, you can get up, and 5 days out of the week, if you're not retired, you can go to your comfortable job, and it is comfortable, no matter how bad you like it. If you are retired, you can just stay in your comfortable house. And at the end of the week, we can come back, and we can sit in our comfortable seats, and we can do this all over again. Until we can't. Because God says, you know what? I desire you to be an active people. I desire you to have a first love.